Welcome to The Other Coast, a podcast detailing the Malifa meta in Los Angeles. My name is Jeff, and with me here is another SoCal player, Colgan.
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Colgan. You know, it just occurred to me that when we do these greetings or this intro, and then you always say, like, hey, everyone, because you're talking to the audience. And then I always say, hey, Colgan, almost like, you know, I'm talking to you, like you've come to, like, my interview booth or whatever. I don't understand. Like, we have an entirely different perspective of who we're talking to in the intro. But then once we do the episode, it's not like I spend the whole time, like, it's an episode of Fresh Air or something.
Wait, what is Fresh Air exactly?
Okay, well, you might want to edit that part out, you know, to save yourself the embarrassment. but it's like, the most prominent interview program on NPR. Like, Terry Gross has been doing it for years and years and years, and like, basically one of the guests put it as, like, when you're dead, like, the Fresh Air interview is where they pull things for your obituary. So it's guess you don't really listen to NPR, which is okay. Not everyone has to be well informed.
I hear about it a lot, but what does NPR actually stand for?
National Public Radio.
Okay.
And then there's a, like, affiliate station. So there's a KPCC down here in Southern California, which is a public radio station that hosts NPR programming, but it isn't an NPR station. So they have, you know, their own programming. And, you know, I would, of course, I'm happy to suggest to people that they support their public radio stations, because public radio stations provide local reporting. They're pretty much the last true bastion of independent local journalism, and NPR is pretty high quality national journalism. So this has nothing to do with the episode we're talking about. This is not a lead into a Nelly episode.
You know, like, but after all that, like, I may be unusually ignorant about this stuff, but you also seem unusually educated about it all.
Well, I'm not gonna apologize for an education.
Listening to the radio when you should be working.
I can multitask. Even though I've read studies show that not only are people unable to multitask, but everyone vastly overrates their ability to multitask.
Yeah, what I've heard is that no one can multitask. It's just you've gotten to the point where, like, you've automated a task so much, or you need so little thought to do something, that you're really just, you know, it's like you're focusing mostly on one task. The other thing you don't really need to think about. So I guess your job is very easy.
I guess for most things, fundamentally, I'm just okay with a mediocre level of performance. So what I get out of multitasking is sufficient for my purposes.
So you're a mediocre worker and a mediocre radio listener.
And a mediocre host.
So what else are you doing right now?
Well, what I'm really trying to do is circle back to our original topic, which I guess I should introduce at this point. We wanted to do an episode about, you know, Malifaux the game, what sort of player we might, like, a hypothetical player, you know, what sort of traits that player would have, or you know, the things about Malifaux that might make it so that we would recommend the game to that person, you know, the kinds of things that we personally enjoy about the play experience of a game of Malifaux. And I mean, I don't know if it's like that old Jeff Foxworthy routine or whatever, but you might be a Malifaux player if, you know, kind of thing, right? Like, if you enjoy arguing over what another means, Malifaux might be the game for you. But yeah, so this is not a episode where it might have a great deal of practical relevance. It's not really one about, you know, it's not a deep dive about an episode. It's not really about rules or mechanics, but it's more thinking about, you know, what do we think works in Malifaux? What do we get from it? And when do we think we might recommend Malifaux? You know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably already interested in Malifaux, probably already a Malifaux player. So, you know, maybe this isn't really super relevant to our listener base. I guess you guys could let us know if this is the kind of episode that you enjoyed listening to. But I think part of why we wanted to do this episode is, you know, just thinking about what it is we get from Malifaux as a game as opposed to other experiences, right, Colgan?
Yeah, that is why we wanted to talk about this episode, Jeff. You are absolutely correct.
So, okay, so to start out with, Colgan, what is it that you get from Malifaux? William, what do you enjoy about the game of Malifaux that maybe is distinct from other games? I mean, I recognize there are things you might enjoy about it that you would share with other games too, but what is it that Malifaux kind of does for you?
Yeah, so one thing I really like in any game I play is, I guess, the ability to like asymmetry, or feeling like you're playing something that's like fundamentally different than your opponent. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned in like other podcasts we've had that I don't really like symmetric games, because I like the idea that I might be slightly better at something and like playing to those advantages against my opponent. Like just having the ability to kind of like have really unique interactions. And I feel like of all the games I've played, like Malifaux has the most room for those unique interactions, with like the huge difference in types of crews you see, like how inherent certain powers and abilities are to them that other crews or keywords can't replicate.
Right. Yeah, I would say Malifaux is probably the best asymmetrical game that I have played. And for me, that there are two dynamics in Malifaux that are pushing that. One is that the crews can be quite divergent. There's, you know, I think varying levels of uniqueness, or you know, some of the crews are kind of way far out there, whereas some others are a bit more conventional. So the degree to which any two crews in a particular game are going to be different, or kind of good at the same things or different things, is going to vary. But as a whole, Malifaux, the masters that are available, the keywords available, offer, I think, a wide range of ways to play the game. But also in Malifaux, because of the scheme pool, what the crews are trying to do on the table is not necessarily the same thing. And that can drive asymmetrical play as well. And I think that those two dynamics work better in Malifaux than in most games that I've seen.
Yeah, I would agree. I know we like to use 40K as a punching bag, so I'm going to bring it out again. But in like the recent, well, maybe they did it before 9th edition, but I'm only really familiar with 9th edition. Like, they introduce secondary objectives, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a bunch of secondaries, and there's some secondary objectives that are unique to a particular faction. And I thought I would like it a lot more, because I'm like, oh, this is just like Malifaux, right? Like, you have the primary objective, which everyone knows and is fighting over, and you have these secondary ones that you can kind of tailor based on the situation. But like, in most games, it feels like I didn't really have a choice, or that it was like the way that you scored secondaries was so, what's the right word for it? It was so inherent to how you played that it didn't really affect your playstyle at all. Incidental,
right? Like, yeah. You already want to kill everything on the opponent's board. So, I killed all of his troop units, so I got extra points. But that was something, if you were winning the game, you were going to have killed all of his troop units anyways. Something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So it didn't really feel like it was something you planned around, or it was more like, all right, I need to kill everything, so I'm just going to take this one because it kills everything. And it kind of felt like, I guess also with kind of the static way that you build lists, that you're pretty much always taking the same secondaries.
Mm-hmm.
From my understanding, probably at like the higher levels of competition, there's actually going to be a bit more nuance than someone like me can ever really talk to. But I guess that's might also be another point against it, because I feel like in Malifaux very early on, I think it's fairly apparent that the schemes you choose are going to depend a lot on the situation and the map layout, and possibly, a lot of other factors, and that, the flexibility and the understanding of how to score them is very important.
Right. Aren't secondary objectives public knowledge in 40K? I thought that they were.
They probably are.
Yeah, I believe that they are. You can pick from a list, but I believe what you've picked is known to your opponent. And I think that is another element that works really well in Malifaux, this kind of hidden knowledge aspect to it, or hidden information rather. This hidden information aspect to it, kind of trying to puzzle out what your opponent is trying to do. And so on the flip side of that, because asymmetry is something I value, because I enjoy that hidden information element too, when certain schemes are basically dead letters and other schemes are just so very commonly chosen because they're easy to achieve, I think that really strikes at the heart of what I enjoy about Malifaux. Mm-hmm. And so it makes like schemes like Research Mission right now, search the ruins in you know previous GGs or whatever. When you have schemes that are really easy to score, such that it's crews are trying to do the same thing, and now it's not really such a big question of what they're doing. I do think that that subtracts from the game in that it hits the elements that I enjoy, but also since that those are some of the specific things that make me say, oh yeah, Malifaux is what I want to play as opposed to something else, right? Because everyone has choices.
Mm-hmm.
If you're hitting what's special about Malifaux, and especially unattractive dynamic for me.
Yeah, I could definitely agree. I do enjoy it a lot more when there's a lot more tension in trying to score certain schemes. I guess that is one of the rough things too. Like once you get a little more familiar with some of like the current, I guess, rule packets for Malifaux, where it's like there's this one scheme and it's just like it's kind of just like 3 points for your crew, and it's like I just have to take this. If I actually want to win this game, I should be taking this, and if I don't, I'm just kind of self-handicapping myself,
right? Like the, you know, the last Vassal World Series thing I played in when I was this is actually that from the opposite side, but you know, I was playing the Crossroads 7 and Catch and Release was in the pool twice. It's like, okay, thanks. You know, the last two times I played at the store, Catch and Release was in the pool too, I think. The last time, I don't think my opponent took it. Or if they took it, they didn't score it. But I think they didn't take it. But yeah, it's just like, well, okay. This is only on me. I know the pool before I pick my crew. But yeah, and I don't think Catch and Release is a scheme that needs to be nerfed. I just don't like it.
Crossroads 7 fan.
But you know, balance, I think, is another issue when it hits this asymmetrical play, right? So one of the cool things about Malifaux is you might have a fighting crew versus a crew that really doesn't want to fight or maybe even interact with the other player much at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they want to walk around and do their own thing, and the more they can do that, kind of the better they're going to be doing in the game, and you know, vice versa, the more the fighting crew can kind of kill models and just, you know, cause a ruckus, the better the game might go for them.
Mm-hmm.
If the game is perfectly balanced to where either option works in this given pool, you know, that's fantastic. But if you have a game where one or the other is easier to do, then you have some issues. And I do think Malifaux, you know, has been noted by other, you know, by other pods out there, Malifaux has, you know, the way the GG pools have worked out, there's been kind of a heavy, you know, not so much maybe in this one, but in previous pools, like just a scrum around the center. And a scrum around the center is still a very common dynamic in Malifaux.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think things consistently tend to be good, like high mobility tends to consistently be good. And there aren't really instances that kind of punish mobility or really give a slower cruise kind of a time to shine. In a lot of the current objectives, you really have to have mobility. You really have to be able to cross the board. I do think summoning has always been too good, right? Like, mm-hmm. You can just kind of go into some of these balance issues that exist. But when balance issues impact the ability to play, I guess, impact your range of crews that really are viable, then it reduces that asymmetrical play element that is attractive.
Yeah, and I think talking to that, I guess we can just kind of mix and match things we like and things that are kind of negatives. Because
mm-hmm.
I know overall, like, I feel like Malifaux is a fairly balanced game, but, you know, the asymmetry can also muddle that quite a bit, mm-hmm. where it's like sometimes you're losing with the crew and it's like, you know what, I just need to learn this crew a little bit better and then we'll be successful. But I remember there are cases, I remember one of the players in our meta, they really liked Yoko and they picked her up and they're playing with the crew and finding like zero success.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And at the time I was like, you know, like I was looking at it and I remember thinking like Yoko felt a little weak, but I was like, I was still fairly new to the games. Like I must be missing something, right? Like there must be something I'm missing about how you're supposed to play her, how you're supposed to use this card manipulation. And then, you know, the huge update comes out to Yoko and it's like, oh, now she feels like a master.
Yeah. And, you know, no game is going to have perfect balance, right? And I think everyone understands that. And I think on the whole, Malifaux does a pretty good job of balance, especially when you kind of consider the wide range of effects that they're trying to fold all into one game. You know, it's not the kind of game where, oh yeah, this only play schemey guys in this one and only play fighting ones in this one. No, I mean, they're trying to make it possible for all these different mechanics to interact with each other. And so, you know, we can be a little critical of the devs sometimes, but I think on the whole, they do a fairly good job. But I think, as you said, not only can the asymmetry kind of mask some balance issues that may exist, but also because Malifaux is a game of skill, and that is something that I also enjoy about it, that can also like mask some balance elements, right? There are players who, like, I am a pretty mid-tier player, relative, mm-hmm. you know, on the scale of Malifaux players. So there are players in these Vassal tournaments, or, you know, just there are stronger players out there who can just play whatever and have an, you know, have an advantage over me or beat me or whatever. And that mm-hmm. might give me the impression that, oh, something is like really strong, when really that's the skill gap, mm-hmm. skill gap there. So I think it makes it a bit harder to evaluate models mechanically, just because it can, you know, it can be hard to even like understand really how good or how bad a model is.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, you know, we look at the general stat lines, but I don't think that's like, with how complex interactions can be in Malifaux, that doesn't necessarily give you a great read of the relative power level, right? Obviously, if something has like, you know, defense 9 and like willpower 9, you're like, that seems a little bit off. But, you know, it's usually not that egregious. I mean, like, it's never really that egregious. But then, you know, there's definitely some interactions with like, you know, how, you know, this little extra line of text on this ability kind of just like opens the door to like all these other possibilities that maybe the designers didn't necessarily like think about or consider. And now it just, and because there's this asymmetry, because there definitely is that skill gap, like you said, where a higher skill player, you know, they can definitely mask these little imbalances. It comes to the point where it's like, oh, you know, we're just not playing these other crews, right? Or we haven't learned, I guess, like how to counter this yet. But it can be, yeah, it can be definitely very difficult to see, because it's really hard to kind of make, I guess, easy power comparisons between crews, because what they do and what they're meant to do is so radically different.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, on top of that, you have the additional fact that in Malifaux, you are supposed to, and I say that in the sense that the way the developers have made the game and intentionally made the game, is that you see the objectives before you pick your crew, right? So mm-hmm. you can just play whatever, and many people do just play whatever, right? And it's not a newer player thing. You know, a lot of experienced players are just like, hey, I'm going to, you know, either they main one thing, or, you know, they main a narrow range, or they're like, hey, this is what I brought to the store or whatever. So a lot of people do just play whatever into any pool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Malifaux is a game where what's good is supposed to be based on what scores, and what scores is supposed to, you know, to vary from pool to pool. So I think that's another layer of how the asymmetry in terms of the goals that exist might be different, complicate balance. And I think with fighting crews, at least, it's easier to see the efficiency line on fighting crews. Mm-hmm. And so it's probably easier to balance fighting crews against each other. Which isn't to say that all the fighting crews are equally balanced, right? They're not. But I'm actually really glad it's not my job to have to balance, like, a Lady Justice against a Nelly, right? Like, what they are trying to do, how they're trying to play the game is just so different that I think that that's a real challenge. And I think, on the whole, Weird does a better job than might be expected.
Mm-hmm. And I guess playing into this, too, like, I know you've definitely had the experience. I think everyone that's played Malifaux has had this experience, right? Like, the difference in like skill or ability you have, even with just a particular crew after playing it through a couple of games, I feel like that also kind of, you know, plays into this, like, how hard it is to tell how something is balanced and how it can kind of affect your perception of how strong crews should be. Once you've kind of understood how one crew plays, and it usually takes a couple of games playing as them. And that's why, you know, the most common experience is like, oh, if you feel like an enemy crew is overpowered, you just play through them and you start to learn their weaknesses. And this mm-hmm. is, I think, a really common thing you hear about in any other game, right? It's like, oh, if you're playing against another army, you know, you play them, you learn their weaknesses, and you learn kind of how to counter them. But I think kind of the difficulty in it is, when you talk about other games, they might have like 8 armies in the game. So, you know, you spend like a couple, you know, like a day or two learning about the army. It's like, okay, now I understand how to beat them. But Malifaux, there's like 54 masters. So it's like, okay, you just need to learn, you know, you just need to spend a week with like every single master and then you will kind of start learning how to play against them. So it's like a huge time commitment to start to get an idea of like the relative power level and like what these crews actually look like when they're performing at like their, I guess, to their ideal standard.
Right. Yeah, for sure. And I think that that actually goes to the importance of skill in Malifaux, which is, you know, kind of the next thing that I really like with Malifaux. I like that Malifaux is a game of skill. There, it, you know, there is a luck element to it. You know, you can lose a game because of luck. It's entirely possible. But I think Malifaux is a game of skill. And that is, in fact, a game of many skills. Some of these skills are easier to acquire than others, right? So things like model knowledge and scheme and strat pool knowledge and rules knowledge, you know, that's something I think anyone really can acquire. Whereas some other skills, like positioning, I am a bit sloppy with my positioning and sometimes I get punished for it and sometimes I don't. But that is a, you know, that's a thing that kind of can distinguish me from a better, you know, stronger or maybe a weaker player. Like that's an element of the game that maybe I could improve on, or maybe it's just inherently about the way that I play Malifaux, or maybe the way I play games in general. Malifaux has a pretty firm math engine behind it, right? Understanding the math of the game is a skill. How to play a particular crew is a skill. You were just saying how if you encounter a crew and you think it's strong, play the crew to figure out its weaknesses. I've been in situations where I've seen a model do great, and it's like, all right, I'm totally going to try that model, and it does nothing for me, and it just gets blown off the table. And it, you know, it's not that that model is bad. It's you know, almost certainly that I misused it. So I think the fact that there are many ways in Malifaux where my choices as a player have an impact on the game, and I guess, you know, ultimately you can probably call that skill. That's one of the things that I really like about the game.
I definitely agree. As I've been getting, I guess, like more into the hobby as of late, you know, like I've always kind of dabbled in tabletop games, but it's only been recently that I've been spending a good chunk of my free time trying out a bunch of different other games, like going deep into Malifaux, like learning rule sets of games I'm probably never even going to play. Mm-hmm. But like one of the things I've come to realize is I get really tilted when I feel like I don't have agency in a game. And I've learned that I kind of need to avoid those games because it doesn't matter if I win, I don't really feel a sense of like, I guess the closest word is like accomplishment or like satisfaction. Uh-huh. It's just like things just kind of fell my way. And then if I lose, I get really frustrated because it's like I should be able to do something to win next time or at least to improve in some way. But there isn't really anything there for me to grasp onto. And that just feels extremely frustrating to me.
Right. Yeah, I am with you. I like agency in my games. And of course, to some extent, this is sort of a silly thing to say, right? Because if you asked anyone, do you want your choices to matter? Right? Like pretty much everyone is going to say yes, right? But I think what distinguishes Malifaux maybe from, okay, this is not remote. These games are not trying to do the same thing, right? So a fair comparison is not really, or rather a comparison between them is not really fair or possibly maybe even meaningful. But I'm going to do it anyways. Okay. So like Dice Throne, okay? For those of you who aren't familiar, Dice Throne is, you know, it's Battle Yahtzee, right? Like, you roll your dice, understanding probability is important, and you do have some options, but it's mostly, you know, like I said, it's mostly Yahtzee. You know, you roll the dice and you pick the best thing that comes up. And I don't want to say that you don't have any choices or whatever. You definitely do. But to me, that's a game that I like really can't derive much of any enjoyment about or from, rather, except insofar as, you know, if you're playing a game and you're enjoying playing with other people, you know, it's like it's a thing that you happen to be doing while you're with other people. Mm. Right. You know, there's a lot of kind of casual games like that, like Flux or, you know, Exploding Kittens or whatever. Right. You know, not every game has to be so mentally demanding. Mm-hmm. But Dice Throne is a game where I feel like my choices really don't matter. I roll the dice, and since I understand the probability well enough, I don't really think I'm making meaningful choices in most circumstances. Whereas in Malifaux, I feel like almost everything that I do has an impact on the game, right? It, largely because of positioning. Because positioning is the one element where you can really get punished. if you do like the wrong action, yeah, it can be significant, but like leaving a model in a place where you didn't think they were in danger and then they get wiped off the board, that happens to me disturbingly often, and it has a huge impact on the game. But it's also, it was like my choice that led to that.
Yeah, like I definitely agree. Like, a game is a lot more satisfying to me. Like, even if I just get like wiped off the table, it was just like, God, I fucked up so bad. Whereas it's like, you know, in games where you have a little less agency, it's like, I guess like the Picard thing, right? Like, I did everything right and I still lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, when there's nothing to improve on, then it's a lot harder for me to maintain interest in the long run. But like, also on that note, I guess I don't want to make it to seem like, oh man, Malifaux is the greatest game ever and it's the only thing you should play. I think everyone can probably agree to this though, but like, depending on like how you're feeling the day or your mood, it's really going to determine like what kind of games you want to play. Like how you mentioned, like there's more casual games that aren't as mentally draining, and Malifaux is very mentally draining. And there's just some days where I'm like, no, fuck it. Today is not a Malifaux day for me.
Sure. Well, and I think that goes to kind of the next thing that I appreciate about it, you know, sort of the next, I guess, go back to the topic. We've kind of been using ourselves by analogy, right? Like, if you also enjoy these things, you might be a Malifaux player. Right? So like, the depth is another element of Malifaux that I enjoy, and that, you know, if I know a player is looking for a game with more mechanical depth, that would lead me to recommend Malifaux, right? Malifaux is a game of mechanical, not just effects, but mechanical interactions, right? The way models interact with each other can be very important, and certain crews have this to a greater extent than others. You know, it's possible to have a lot of chain effects. It's possible for one model in isolation to maybe not be so good, but if you use it in combination with this other model, or if you use it in this particular circumstance, like maybe a particular scoring pool, like team and strat pool or whatever, or maybe against a particular opponent, then they can be more effective. And you know, not only does Malifaux have a lot of these mechanical interactions, but they are at different levels of complexity, right? Like, so you can grow in the game by discovering things about the game, by discovering these interactions, and maybe even by uncovering new ones that aren't generally known. A lot of the things that end up being overpowered on the scene end up being discoveries by, you know, one player or one player group or whatever, and then subsequently spread throughout the, you know, the wider Malifaux community. And that's a dynamic that, yeah, it can lead to sort of the mentally taxing experience of Malifaux, as you mentioned. But if you're a player who appreciates a game with that potential, then Malifaux might be for you.
Yeah, for sure. But I guess another thing, I'm going to try and balance this out because you're being too fucking positive.
This is a game about, like, is what sort of player Malifaux is for.
I thought we were going to do both sides. Wasn't that it?
I just think the antonym is clear by inference, right? If you're not looking for... we're saying we like Malifaux because it's got this mechanical depth to it. So if you know, if that's not really your thing, Malifaux might never be for you.
I suppose that's true.
But no, go ahead and be negative. I just
lost my train of thought now.
Well, it's just... That's really disappointing then, because it's so rare for you to be negative. That, like, I was almost like, yes, Padawan, tap into you.
I guess like one thing, and I guess it's not necessarily negative to Malifaux. I guess I'm trying to think about it in general, because I remember one thing, I read it back. It's like when they were talking about games and stuff, they were looking at how the length of the game can determine, I guess like the overall mood or like feelings that players will take away from a game. And that, like, after like a certain length, like, negative feelings can be intensified, I guess, maybe as, I don't know, I don't remember exactly why, but maybe as sort of like a sunken cost effect.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, like, I guess, you know, if you have a if you play a game and it's not fun, but the game lasts like 20 minutes, you're not gonna feel that shitty about it for very long. It's like, it was 20 minutes,
right?
Like, big deal. Yeah, I remember, like, when I was playing Old Fantasy, I just started playing again. It was like a 2K game, and I didn't really know what I was doing, right? Like, I didn't necessarily know how to make good lists. I didn't know what was strong. I didn't really understand other people's armies. And I would play into a game, and the game would take like 3 or 4 hours, but it was like pretty clear after like the first turn that I was not going to win. Like, right. I did not bring the right stuff. I have no way of, like, really effectively hurting your guys while you're just, like, cutting through swaths of my people. But we still have to go through all four or five rounds of this to determine the final score. And, like, it would just kind of, like, ruin my mood for, like, the whole day. Because, like, I just spent, like, 3 hours doing something completely unenjoyable. And it felt like I was kind of like a bystander to this game I was supposed to be an active participant in.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I would say that, you know, I don't think, first of all, anyone really wants to spend more time. No one wants to spend their time poorly, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Malifaux, experienced players can routinely, I think, get games finished in 2.5 hours. Not every game is going to finish in 2.5 hours. But I think for experienced players, 2.5 hours is an achievable norm. That would make a fast game like 2 hours and a slower game like 3 hours, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there are some players, you know, because they're more, maybe they're more deliberative, or maybe, you know, they're not really able to play Malifaux all that frequently, so, you know, they don't have a ton of familiarity with everything. You know, they've not built up the skill set to where they're going to be completing games in like 2.5 hours regularly, and they are looking at like 3+, 4+ hours even, possibly, right? If you're a time-sensitive player and you're not willing or able to put in the effort to where Malifaux is going to fit into a window that is convenient for you, then yeah, Malifaux may entirely just not be the game for you. These elements that I talked about as enjoying the game, right? Like, it's skill-based, my actions matter, my choices matter, you know, there's mechanical depth to it. Those are factors that, like, if I neglected a lot of these things, if I just played sloppier, you know, even sloppier, I could play Malifaux faster, but then what I enjoy about Malifaux would be diminished. And so that, to me, that indicates that if I were time sensitive, I'm not particularly time sensitive, but if I were, you know, Malifaux probably wouldn't be the fit, you know, for me.
Yeah. And I think adding on to that, I know a lot of times, you know, people say like, oh, as you get more reps in, you know, you'll go down from like the 4 hour mark to like the 2.5, 3 hour mark, right? Or you'll get games faster and faster. But then that's also just like predicating on the fact that you have all this extra time to spend on the game. So you can play enough to like pour in enough hours into the game that you can start playing a little bit faster. Malifaux was a lot of fun, but, you know, even outside of the games taking like anywhere from 2 to 3+ hours, and definitely 3+ hours in your first start, in order to get that down, you need to spend a lot of time outside of the game, I think, familiarizing yourself with the rules, familiarizing yourself with crews, interactions, and like how all this stuff kind of connects together within game. Being in the wargaming scene again, I realized that it seems like a very small percentage of players will actually read through rule books. So like, I feel like you need to have like a certain, maybe like resilience, or I guess a lot of enthusiasm in order to kind of start, you know, being able to get in these like faster games. So I guess like, as long as you know that going into it, that you want to get these quicker games, then it kind of predicates itself on actually spending a lot of time outside of game, like preparing yourself in a sense.
Right. I remember I saw this this Facebook post. I think it was a joke. I don't think it was like someone reporting their own experience, but maybe it was. I don't remember. But it was about this D&D group who for Christmas agreed to get each other a book that they hadn't read. So the game master got everyone a player's handbook. yeah, I mean, I do think probably a lot of people get a demo, and that gives a solid foundation. It's, but as we've said, it's not really a replacement for reading the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think probably a lot of people play a demo, and then they just, you know, that's how they learn the game. And I myself am guilty of this in Star Wars Armada, right? I'm in a Star Wars Armada campaign right now, and I didn't bother to read the rules. I got a demo, and then I started playing in this campaign. And the first 3 games that I played, there was just a huge rules gotcha, which maybe gotcha isn't even the right term, because I don't think it was maliciously sprung on me. But there was just a huge aspect of the rules that my failure to understand completely shaped the rest of the game. You know, I'm not saying I would have won, but for that misunderstanding. But
mm-hmm.
I think Star Wars Armada compared to Malifaux is a pretty simple game, right? And I think a lot of Malifaux players also just do a demo, and then they run into a lot of these situations, like the kind of, you know, these kitty corner cases,
right?
And not only can that be disappointing from a gameplay standpoint, but I think it can be quite confusing sometimes too, right? Like, oh, why does this work one way in this situation and not in another situation. And there might be quite good reasons why, but if you feel confused and frustrated in the moment, that impression has a strong ability to linger and sort of form or integrate itself into your sense of what a Malifaux play experience is like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, even like for me playing regularly and having read the rule book, maybe not well enough, but there's definitely times, like situations where, like, I guess this goes hand in hand with the asymmetry. There's just situations that never really come up with crews that I play. Mm-hmm. And then when they come up, I'm just like, fuck, how are you supposed to resolve this again?
I mean, I would also say that in Malifaux, you know, you mentioned that there's a lot of masters in Malifaux, right? Like, you know, it's kind of analogous to army selection in other games. There's a lot, very few war games have the sheer number of choices that Malifaux does. And I think that that does lead some people to jump around in crews a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that is maybe, well, if game length is your concern, jumping, right? Like if you're time sensitive, jumping from crew to crew constantly is really going to complicate efforts to get the game down to a shorter window.
Yeah, for sure. Because you're basically relearning, like, I guess almost half the game every time you play at that point.
Right. And, you know, playing against people who do jump around also, you know, isn't really helping things in that regard either. Of course, you don't really have control over what your opponent is going to play. But no, I mean, I would agree with you. If you're not the kind of player who, I mean, sorry, I should change that. If you're a time sensitive player, if you have, you know, an unwillingness or an inability to spend 3 or 3.5 hours on a game when you're starting, or maybe potentially more, right? Like, you know, it's, you know, there are games that go longer than even 3.5 hours. Or I shouldn't have said it like that because I don't mean it as a criticism, but it's just, you know, I'm trying to give a realistic assessment here. If you have a specific window and it's not something that Malifaux can accommodate, Malifaux, or at least, you know, regular Malifaux, right? Like Malifaux played within the normal confines of a full game may not be for you. So next, I think, so the setting is something that I think draws in a lot of players, right? For myself, I saw the first edition crew boxes in a store. And I really liked the art of them. I didn't really understand anything about the game, but the aesthetic, right? So I didn't even understand about the setting. Just the aesthetic of the models interested me enough to want to learn more about the game. And I think Malifaux does have a lot of people who are probably drawn to the art, maybe drawn to the sculpts, maybe some people who are, you know, more interested in the setting maybe than the mechanics. If you are kind of interested in this like Victorian era, if you're a steampunk fan, if you're kind of a like a horror fan, like a Penny Dreadful sort of fan, Malifaux might be a good fit for you.
Yeah, I mean, the setting is definitely, I think, like a huge pull for a lot of people, because it really lends itself to the aesthetics you see in specific crews and I guess factions as well.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's just nice to see this kind of like different take, because I feel like, you know, the major like sci-fi and fantasy themes have been explored fairly heavily in a lot of other games, whereas like feel like the particular style and weird specific take on like I guess like this Victorian area stuff is not as common, so it's kind of refreshing in a sense.
You know, I've never played Kings of War, but right, like Kings of War is just fantasy battles, right? It's just Warhammer Fantasy. You know, we're getting a little bit into Mantic Armada, and so that's set in the same universe. But, you know, there's the Skaven, there's the Lizardmen, and they even, for the most part, have the same aesthetics as the GW counterpart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Malifaux is not like a reskinned version of something else, and it doesn't even really draw from the same well of inspiration that a lot of other titles have drawn from. Malifaux has steampunk, War Machine has steampunk, but they're not the same aesthetically at all. So, you know, even to the extent that it shares the roots with other titles out there, I think Malifaux has done a very good job of establishing its own identity. And if you're the kind of person who's looked at a Malifaux art box and been like, oh, geez, that looks cool, you know, I think that that could be a basis for trying the game, and it could be enough to sustain your interest in the game potentially.
I guess, like, as far as lore stuff, too, well, I guess this is, you know what, never mind, no.
Yeah, we need Jim to talk lore stuff. But, you know, what interests me, like, you know, you won't play Yin the Pen and Gollum because you don't like God.
Yeah.
Right? And Allie won't play Serena Bowman because of the way she looks. I can't think of anything in 40K where I'm like, no, I won't play that thing. Well, okay, so first of all, I don't have that dynamic in Malifaux, right? But for 40K, there are armies that the aesthetic draws me to more than the other. In fact, I pick 40K pretty much only on the basis of aesthetics, because I'm about to go into a rant and I don't want to, right? But basically, I pick 40K just on the basis of aesthetics. But where I'm going, I guess, is that I don't feel like 40K aesthetics are particularized enough to where I would have a strong, like, repellent reaction to a 40K model the way you do, like, Yin the Pen and Gollum. Yeah, you can just proxy Yin.
Fuck that. Why am I even using Yin in the first place? Is he really good with Kudai or something?
I mean, I don't know if it's good with Kudai or not. I find it really interesting that you can, like, be reviled by the art enough to where, like, you wouldn't even proxy it, for instance. I guess you would have to see the art on the card, though. So maybe if Weird makes an alternate Yin version.
All right, if they make an alternate, yeah, I might use it. Like, I mean, that's how it's been with most of the models, right? Like, I guess that's another nice thing that I really like about Malifaux, the fact that they have alternate models, alternate sculpts for certain models. I guess it's a nice way to introduce, like, cool little minis and, like, being able to, like, customize the look a little bit without just introducing a ton of model bloat.
Yeah, and, you know, most of the, I shouldn't say most because I don't have the math in front of me, but my impression is that a lot of the alternate sculpts are kind of conventionally attractive female sculpts, as a, you know, whereas the original sculpt may have been something different. It's an opportunity for people to pick something that they may personally find aesthetically more pleasing. I don't think it's an accident that a lot of weird sculpts have, alternate sculpts are that way.
You also got, like, the barfing ponies and the stitch togethers.
Weird is pretty creative, I think, with their aesthetics in general. And some of those unique sculpts are also, you know, kind of out there, right? Yeah, the barfing unicorns, the cat lady. I think that's just a fantastic concept for the alt Hamlin.
Yeah, I really appreciate how, you know, having alternate sculpts lets them play around with the concept a bit more. And I think that's also where, you know, I guess where you stated earlier how the asymmetry and how unique each faction is kind of lends itself, because the internal mechanics of the keywords are so strong. Like, you can make these really thematic alternate sculpts that still feel, I guess, very true to the idea of the original keyword.
No, I mean, I'd agree. So alternate sculpts brings in mind something else that I think potentially can make Malifaux recommendable for a certain type of player. If you are cost sensitive, Malifaux is a skirmish game, it's not an army scale game, so the buy-in is generally going to be a bit less, and it is possible to play, you know, Malifaux on, like, $100, $150 budget, right? I'm not saying if you get in Malifaux, you're only going to end up spending $150 on the game, right? that's probably not realistic at all. But it is possible to pick a crew that's going to work very well in most situations, and to just stick to those models. You know, I think one of the draws skirmish games have in general, as opposed to army skill games, is the cheaper entry point, if not necessarily the cheaper ceiling.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely nice that you don't have to make a huge initial time or money investment before you can play the real game, quote unquote. Like, one thing I never really thought too much about is a lot of other war games, you know, they'll specifically release material for, like, slow growth leagues or escalation leagues. So, like, oh, this is for newer players to slowly build up to an army, learn the rules, and understand, like, how to play. And then in Malifaux, there's nothing like that. And I would argue it doesn't even make any sense in Malifaux, because the space between starting the game and having a full crew is so minimal, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, they did have, like, a slow grow thing near the end of M2E that was kind of based around having a, like, a henchman as your leader or whatever, and it was, like, kind of a campaign system, kind of a slow grow, but yeah, I never really, even though I bought the stuff for it, I never played it, so I can't even say how effective it was. But yeah, I mean, I think for skirmish games, it has a lower financial entry if you're the, you know, kind of player who paints their stuff. Painting a skirmish team is going to be easier probably than painting a whole army. So that, I guess that's another point in its favor.
Guess it doesn't matter to you.
No, it doesn't matter to me. I
guess there's
like
less build time for you, right? Yeah.
Well,
you don't even build your own shit. Ugh.
Well, Malva models are so terrible to build, but yeah, I just I hire commissioned painters to build my Malva models.
But you do that for other games too, right? It's not just Malva.
Yeah, I had someone build my sister's army, someone at the store. She did a really good job. I need to find someone to build my Conquest Parabellum army.
All right, old Dominion, like decaying Romans, yeah.
I can't stand building, like, all this hobby stuff is just so terrible.
You're talking about aesthetics.
So, I guess, you know, we've run through some things we enjoy about the game, and, you know, by analogies, you know, if you're the kind of player who would be similarly motivated, Malfo might be the right game for you. In this section, I'd like to talk about some ways to maybe mitigate some elements that maybe might indicate that Malifaux won't work for people if they otherwise enjoy Malifaux, right? So for instance, maybe you really enjoy Malifaux, but you find it's just too much. It is possible to play at smaller game sizes. I've even seen tournaments at different stone sizes. And I know, in fact, Third Floor Wars, I think, had one of those Path to Podiums where they played at 40 stones, or it wasn't 40, it wasn't a round number. I remember thinking it was kind of weird. It was like 37 or something like that. But even though the normal game is 50 stones, there's nothing to say that you have to play 50 stones, just like 40K, you know, normal game might be 2K or whatever, but there's nothing saying you can't come in and play a 1000 point game. I would say that in 40K or in Malifaux, I feel like the implications of playing at different stone levels than the recommended one is a bit stronger than in, you know, games that maybe don't have the level of mechanical interactions that Malifaux does.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think Malifaux, you know, it's balanced around 50 stones, and especially with certain mechanics like summoning,
mm-hmm.
or like certain keywords that rely on a lot of synergy with other models, once you start lowering the cost, it can have outsized effects on the game or the balance of certain crews. Like, yeah, running summoners at lower point costs, I feel like, makes them almost insurmountable.
Yeah, or, you know, Henchman Hardcore, it's an alternate game mode that Weird puts out and, you know, supports. Summoning isn't allowed in that. So that's another way that if you enjoy Malifaux's aesthetic, if you enjoy kind of the way Malifaux actually plays, but you know, you're looking for a little bit less of Malifaux, or looking for an experience that's a bit faster, you can play alternate game modes like Henchman Hardcore. For me personally, you know, again, this kind of goes to playing at fewer stones. My enjoyment of Malifaux is pretty closely tied to the default game experience. You know, I really like Masters. I know I play the Crossroads 7 a lot too, but when I play, you know, the crews that I play, I tend to kind of like the Master is a big draw for me. It's hard for me to think of a crew that I would really be willing to play if I didn't like the Master, in a mechanical or aesthetic sense, whatever it is that matters to me at that day. So Henchman Hardcore has never been appealing to me. But that doesn't mean it can't be the right way to play Malifaux for some people.
Yeah, and I guess on speaking of that, a big part that I guess after playing Malifaux, I've definitely been looking for in other games is the idea of that kind of like heroic leader.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the idea of, I guess, like the leader of your crew or army really warping how the rest of the army plays and having an outsized effect versus a lot of like other army games I played where it's like, oh, your leader is he gets plus one leadership to all your other guys if they get sad and try to run off the table. And it doesn't, you know, it's like they are the leader of the army, but it doesn't really feel like they affect that much with the army. Whereas like Malifaux is like, oh, you know, you're picking Hamlin, you're like creating rats everywhere and exploding them to spread disease against everyone, or you're Nelly and you're just trying to get an interview with people.
Yeah, I would say that actually my preference is kind of in the opposite for a lot of games. You know, I think it's kind of like in 40K, right? The general of an army is also just like the strongest dude in the army always, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Whereas in real life, generals are like these middle-aged people and the soldiers are, you know, the young people who are a lot more fit and a lot stronger. And so I don't necessarily need my leaders to be better models. But I do like, well, so I would say, you know, obviously kind of the genre of the game has a lot to say about that dynamic. But I would say that what I do expect out of a game like Malifaux is for my leader models to have a strong impact on how I want to play the game. And I think that's one of the things that kind of disappoints me about 40K is that, yes, in 40K, my leader is stronger than my troop model. But one leader to another isn't really going to have a huge impact on how I'm going to play the game. Whereas one master from another in Malifaux, you know, that is going to change things quite a bit. Okay, well, so we'll just run through a couple of other things that maybe if you do like Malifaux, but you've got some concerns, you know, if time limit is an issue for you, again, you can play smaller games, you can play different game modes, you can also play with a time limit, right? And ascribe some sort of significance to it. You can play with death clocks, you can just kind of play games the same way they play tournaments with a time window, and then at the end of time, you do some sort of resolution kind of thing. You can, you know, most opponents are going to be pretty accommodating. If you start a game Malifaux, tell someone up front, hey, I got to go in 3 hours. I think it's going to be the rare person who's like, oh, well, I don't want to play. You know, we may not finish. Most people are going to be, okay, well, let's play and see where we get. I think if you are, the one thing I would caution you against is that for a lot of games, skirmish means faster. Right? Faster play, like faster in not only in terms of total game length, but also faster in terms of like how long each person's individual turn is, or kind of like the pace of play. Mm-hmm. Malifaux is a skirmish game, but that doesn't mean that it's quicker to play than an army game, right? The pace of play for Malifaux can be quite deliberative, especially if for players who do adopt kind of a more deliberate pace.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something to keep in mind. I know we've definitely had like some people come in, it's like, oh yeah, Malifaux sounds great, I want to get into a skirmish level game, and it's like, oh yeah, but it takes like about 3 hours. Like, wait, what? They come in, you know, expecting skirmish is like 30 minutes to an hour. And I guess something else I've been thinking about a little bit more, but I really do wish that clocks were just kind of a bit more normalized for, I guess, games in general. Because I feel like they kind of encourage the idea of embracing imperfection in play.
Right.
Because there's like so many times where, you know, you'll get like stuck in the think tank and think about all these possibilities, and you pass them like, oh my God, like I can't believe I didn't think about this or I didn't do this. And I feel like when there's no kind of limit on that, it's just kind of like deliberately punishing you for not taking the time and reading through all these actions, and consequently, you know, like doubling or tripling the amount of time it takes to play through a game.
Yeah, no, I entirely agree. And, you know, we've talked about clocks a lot on this podcast. So, you know, people can just go back and listen to the clocks episode. But I really do think that timing out is going to be rare. You know, I think people are just going to play faster. And I think that can lead to more fun in a lot of situations, right? Like it's not going to be maybe as perfect or as efficient, but wacky things might happen as a result. And that can just lead to like an amusing anecdote or whatever. And ultimately that's what these games are about. I would also say that Malifaux might be the kind of game for you if you are looking for an active community, right? I mean, Malifaux is, it's not 40K. It's not a giant, but on the scale of tabletop war games, Weird is a successful company. Malifaux has what I feel to be a pretty good amount of community content. Right? There's a lot of podcasts out there. There's podcasts that some are more focused on the mechanics of the game. Some are more focused on the setting of the game. You've got some like steam-powered scoundrels that are just like zany or wild, or, you know, they talk about the game, not even really reference, not necessarily as reference as a game, but just like a well of interesting ideas that exist and like a fantastic setting. If you're the kind of person who, you know, if you like Malifaux, but you kind of wish you could experience it differently, there's the other side, the army scale game. There's Through the Breach, the tabletop game, right? Or the tabletop RPG game. So I think Malifaux as a universe also has a lot to offer prospective player. And if you're someone who's kind of hungering, you know, to explore something like that, Malifaux might be for you.
Yeah, definitely agree on that point.
Malifaux also has an active online tournament scene. and even just an active online casual play scene. And so if that's important to you, that's also maybe another factor that might lead to me recommending Malifaux. Well, so Gogan, do you have any other thoughts on things that, you know, might indicate that someone out there is a Malifaux player or, you know, I guess the antonym?
So either a Malifaux player or not a Malifaux player?
Yeah.
If they're not playing Malifaux, they're not a Malifaux player.
But they could be. All right, so any concluding thoughts?
No, I think we covered about everything I wanted to cover.
All right, well, so a concluding thought did occur to me. Some of the interactions in the game, you know, I guess we touched on this kind of briefly, but I just want to mention explicitly, like, can be quite particular, and you have to understand, right? Like, it's not even that you can derive how these things work from logic or from previous examples. You just have to understand the way this thing works. Some people are going to be really kind of turned off by a game that might feel a bit fiddly or might have like kind of these kitty corner cases. And other people might enjoy the fact that the mechanics in Malifaux go that deep. So it's just another thing to kind of keep in mind. The depth of Malifaux, some of it is player choice, some of it is mechanics, and some of it is just the way Weird has decided to develop the rules. And I don't really think in some circumstances Weird is maybe taking the best of all possible options.
Are you sure you're using the right verbs and nouns there?
I am not entirely sure. No, but I'm trying to not go into a rant. So I personally don't understand not playing a game because of a rule change. Or I should say I don't understand. I've not encountered a situation yet where anything has impacted my experience to an extent great enough to where that's going to make me quit. And maybe they're just being dramatic or whatever, but you do see, like, online, people saying, these nerfs have destroyed what I love, I'm not playing anymore. Or this change is stupid, or you guys just are not good at running a game, I'm out. Or this has become too complicated, I'm out. And I'm not saying this doesn't exist for other players or other games, maybe it does, but I feel like I do see that with Malifaux more frequently than with other games. Which isn't to say I see it frequently at all, but it's just not really something I've seen in a lot of other games.
People quitting because of rule changes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea how to quantify that.
Yeah, I don't either. I guess people do quit 40K because of balance changes.
Some of the changes I've been seeing in 9th seem pretty egregious.
Well, I mean, that's because it's just fundamentally a bad game.
So, I mean, I guess in that case, would I have quit from rules changes? Because there was the Dark Eldar and I played them when they're bad in 9th, and then when they got good in 9th, I wasn't playing anymore.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you're a little edgelord snowflake who's just got to play, you know, he's got to play the bad stuff to play on hard mode. But whatever works for you. We're not here to judge people. However you drive enjoyment from whatever it is, as long as you're not hurting other people, go crazy. So I think we've probably exhausted the topic. Again, you know, Malifaux, I think, has a lot to recommend. But it's probably also got some deal breakers out there. And if Malifaux is not the game for you, it's not the game for you. But I would say that if you are just kind of generally interested in miniature war games, Malifaux does have a lot to it that is quite special. So, you know, give it a try. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably a Malifaux player. But, you know, you might be a Malifaux player, or you might be someone who aspires to playing Malifaux more than someone who's actually ever able to play Malifaux due to, you know, life circumstances or not having a meta near you and not wanting to play online or whatever else. But basically, what we like about the game isn't what everyone else is going to like about the game. So if you have any thoughts out there about what you do think are the qualities that are a good fit for a Malifaux player, let us know. If you want to hear us talk about other topics, by all means, let us know. If you've got other armies and other games that are underpowered that you'd like to suggest to Colgan so that, you know, he can feel so special.
Give you a fighting chance.
Let us know. You know, we do this because we play just in Southern California, but we want to be part of the wider Malifaux community. So we just love any feedback. Every time we get a response on Facebook or on Reddit or on our Discord, we love hearing from you guys. I mean, that's why we really do it. We also have a PayPal and Patreon if you'd like to support the channel in that way. And, you know, we really appreciate any previous and current backers and anyone who's considering it in the future. It's not expensive to run a podcast, but, you know, there are some expenses, so it is a nice gesture of support. We also just love it when people listen. So I think that's pretty much all the ways that you can help us out. And we're just grateful for any of them. And with that, I'll just say good night.
Night, everyone.